Good afternoon. I'm Jeff Beckwith, the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Municipal Association, and we'd like to welcome you to the fifth weekly briefing regarding COVID-19 for municipal chief executive officers. This briefing is being put on by the Lieutenant Governor and the Baker-Polito administration and key officials and local officials all across the Commonwealth. Deeply appreciate this real-time information, answering questions and providing as much information as possible to local officials as communities lead the efforts in their own localities to address the COVID-19 pandemic. Right now, the governor and lieutenant governor are finishing their daily briefing, which they provide to the citizens of the Commonwealth. That's down in Gardner Auditorium. And as that briefing looks to finish, the Lieutenant Governor will be joining us in a few minutes into the briefing. But fortunately, we have some good information and great people to start the briefing on behalf of the administration. We have Catherine Hornby, who is Undersecretary for Administration and Finance for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And we have Sean Cronin, who's the Deputy Commissioner for the Division of Local Services that works with on municipal finance for all cities and towns. There's been a lot of information, but not a lot of details about the CARES Act, which the federal government passed now a few weeks ago, providing resources with some limitations on the use of those resources to state governments all throughout the United States. And fortunately, Catherine Hornby and Sean Cronin and the team of administration finance experts are working to try and figure out how to make best use of those resources and be supportive of cities and towns. And so what we're going to do now is to ask Catherine Hornby and Sean Cronin to give a finance update, in particular focusing on the CARES Act and what the administration's plans and work to date have been regarding that. Catherine, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon.
Sure, happy to join you. I take it you can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. All right. So I want to start by saying what I've said before to some of you directly, which is that I am not at all surprised, but really, really impressed with how the municipalities and the state are pulling together to take on a really difficult challenge with huge uncertainties. So I think it's really speaks well of how we collectively try to help this state stay on its feet that we are able to continue to work together so well. So thank you for that. I wanted to address mainly the CARES Act, and then I think Sean is going to address a few other things, and we're happy to take questions or however you want to handle this. But starting out with the CARES Act, the federal CARES Act, also sometimes called the Phase 3 legislation, Phases 1 and 2 had to do with unemployment and some other components, but the CARES Act passes Phase 3 on March 27th. It includes a pretty significant number of grant programs that are for specific purposes, such as there's increased funds for the Community Development Block Grant Program, there's increased transit money through the Federal Transit Authority, there's some money for the Low-Income Home Heating Assistance Program, there's some K-12 money, so there's a number of programs that are, you could say, subject-based or content-based. And then there is $150 billion nationally for the Coronavirus Relief Fund. This ends up being a little bit of an umbrella fund, so I want to spend most of my time on this. So it is a lot of money, no question, nationally and also for the state. It also comes with three sort of simple yet important and potentially more complex than they appear at first glance, three simple rules. So those three rules are, first, that the funds must be used for necessary expenditures of state and local governments that are incurred in connection with the COVID-19 response. So right there, it's for expenditures as opposed to lost revenue. I think that that's a significant a caveat in how the money is set up. The second requirement is that it has to be for things that were unbudgeted as of March 27th, the date that the federal law was enacted. And thirdly, that the costs must be incurred between March 1st and December 30th. So there's this sort of surge period of dealing with the COVID-19 response. So it's broadly available, and yet it's nonetheless is bounded by those three rules. The money is released with relatively little, in fact, almost no, guidance on the front end. There is, however, a requirement in the law that an inspector general be appointed, and there's a statement that funds may be recouped if there's a determination made by the inspector general that they were spent impermissibly. So that's the world we're living in. It's quite a lot of money. With relatively little guidance, but with this statement that it is subject to recruitment if it's not sort of handled properly. So we're trying to make sure that we work together with the municipalities, of course, to handle it properly. The implications within the state, of the $150 billion nationally, $2.7 billion is slated for the state of Massachusetts, so not the government at the state level, but the Massachusetts in total, to the extent that municipalities, there's a provision in the federal law that local government entities of over 500,000 people may apply for grants directly. The only city in the state that's that big is Boston. So Boston has the right to apply for funds directly. Where a local government entity applies for funds directly, that comes out of the statewide allocation. The state is expected to share funds with municipalities as subgrantees. And so there's a pretty express expectation that the state will work jointly with municipalities to understand where the COVID-19 response costs are being incurred and to figure out how to allocate those costs. So I would say Jeff and I had a conversation about this money, I would say, 2 weeks ago. And at the time we said, well, Treasury guidance right around the corner. Treasury guidance is going to be really important. So I would say to you today, Treasury guidance is right around the corner and will be very important. We heard last week that it would be posted by Friday. We heard yesterday that it would be posted that day. It's not posted yet, but where it's anticipated almost daily, I think that will actually be helpful. And I think it will be helpful soon in helping us understand how this money can be spent. I think that there are a couple of key questions that we see. One of them is the intersection between these funds and FEMA costs, because I think where the disasters that we're more familiar with are essentially snowstorms. And so in situations of major storms, normally the major source of federal funding is FEMA. So as you know all too well, I'm sure, where we have a disaster declaration where we account for additional costs that were incurred in the course of the disaster, and then we submit for reimbursement for those costs, there's a sort of a whole protocol around that. This fund is set up in a way that in some ways resembles FEMA quite closely. And so I think it begs the question about how do those two programs interact? Can this be used as the 25 match toward FEMA, where FEMA generally pays for 75% of costs? Can it not be? Does this money have to be exhausted before we can access FEMA? Sort of how do those two things intersect is a really important question. There are other, I would say, similarly important questions, mainly around at the state level, can we use this money for Medicaid? Because if we can, then it will materially help us in terms of balancing this year's budget and next year's budget, and the stabilization of this year's budget and next year's budget, I think, is key to everything else that flows out of the budget, including local aid. So I think right now where we are, unfortunately, is we are waiting for guidance. What we're trying to do directionally is to work with people to figure out the use of funds that will best maximize federal resources, balance the many needs that are around us, and minimize compliance risk. So to make sure that we have the documentation protocols in place, we have the tracking protocols in place to make sure that as we spend this money, we do so in a way that is defensible if and when we get audited. So I wish that we could say, here's the plan, here's the timeline, here's when you can see your share. Unfortunately, we're not quite there yet, but we are very conscious of that need, and we are very conscious of the need at the local level to have funds available in order to take on the cost of COVID-19, and we recognize that many of these costs have already been incurred. So we will stay in touch. We are very conscious of this as a major issue, both for us and for you.
Catherine, thank you for that. Within the past hour, there have been unsubstantiated reports that the stimulus 3.5 measure that the Senate and the U.S. House are looking to pass this week may include a last-minute change to make at least part of the CARES Act funding available for lost revenue. So that is... That would add a new wrinkle and could potentially even delay a little bit a guidance from the Treasury as well. But that would also potentially change the sort of buckets of opportunity to use those funds to ease financial distress as well. I don't know if you've been hearing those same comments from your contacts in Washington as well.
So we've certainly heard those rumors at various times. I haven't heard them today. I've heard them kind of last week and then subsiding. So I had thought that that was becoming less likely. So interesting that maybe it was less likely, but now is coming back into the frame anyway. I don't know. And it would certainly explain where we got what sounded like pretty clear signaling that the White House was trying to get the guidance posted and then didn't. I think clearly there's some sort of tie-up where there isn't consensus or there isn't clarity at the federal level about how these funds should be used. And you know, one obvious reason for that would be if they knew that, in fact, the terms are about to change. So I don't know. I don't want to speculate, but I I've heard those rumors. I've also heard those rumors dismissed.
I muted myself. The local officials, we know the governor is working on through the National Governors Association, that the cities and towns here in Massachusetts through the MMA, through the National League of Cities, U.S. Conference of Mayors, and National Association of Counties are all working to make sure that this is not the final stimulus package and that there is additional financial relief to provide directly to cities and towns, but also to states, because the coming fiscal challenges as a result of lost revenue and increased expenses will certainly overwhelm the resources that are in the CARES Act right now. I will note that I know that a lot of my friends are on and watching because I've received just a whole burst of chats reminding me that I had muted myself. So thanks. Thank you to everyone for being on. And that's a good reminder that when we get to the question section of this this presentation and briefing, I will be using the chat function and not the raised hand function. And we'll be doing the best we can to field questions. There was a question just regarding how to ensure that the CARES Act funds are spent appropriately. Catherine, I think you referred to that as compliance risk and some anecdotal comments that came over in terms of questions about just whether or not there's a high degree of confidence that the funds will flow as envisioned. Certainly we think to governments they will be. But there's a lot of interest from local officials about the resources that are being provided to private entities by the CARES Act and the federal government. Do you have any insights about the compliance risk factors there? I guess not, Catherine. Okay. And are, do we have any other updates regarding the finances of the Commonwealth regarding this fiscal year or next fiscal year, the budget? I do know while we have you on that we had received several inquiries wondering about the status of the state's budget. And from your perspective, it would be good to get an update.
So I'm sorry, was that question addressed to Catherine or to Sean?
That was to Catherine and Sean.
Okay, I missed most of the question, so I'm gonna wing it. If the question was about what are we expecting in terms of this year's budget and next year's budget?
Yes, in terms of timing, in terms of when communities could receive potentially some signals or as they try and shape their own budgets.
Sure. So I think that's a little bit of an open question, or is it very much an open question? We had a meeting last week with economists to try to start to get a handle on the state budget picture from a tax perspective. That was helpful. There was a pretty wide range in terms of forecasts, anywhere from $2 to $6 billion reduction in taxes. And that's, you know, that's obviously a very wide range. I think there's still some very big open questions on the federal side. So Jeff, to your point about, you know, could the CARES Act be amended to allow the use of those funds to replace revenue? I've also heard that there's a possibility that there could be a phase four or phase five or a later phase where there's additional federal funds that are in play. So I realize that in a context of budgeting, what the municipalities really would like is support from the state, obviously, and also clarity with respect to the timeline. Unfortunately, we at the state level are in very much the same position, that we need clarity in order to proceed forward. And I think that we're not quite there yet. The House budget plainly is going to be delayed. So normally, this being school vacation week, normally the House Ways and Means budget would have been pulled out last week, and then it would have been taken up on the floor next week. That obviously is not going to happen. But whether we're, you know, 2 or 4 weeks behind, I'm just not really sure. And we unfortunately do not have a revised timeline at this point.
I thank you. I think that everyone is dealing with the level of uncertainty at the state and the local level, and not knowing how long the economy is going to be shut down or at least slowed down. That's another factor as you're trying to figure out the predictions and the information that you received last week as well. So we recognize that. We'll work with you to get information out to our member cities and towns as quickly as possible as it becomes available. Are there any other finance updates before? I do have a couple of other questions that, as we wait for the Lieutenant Governor, might be able to ask of MEMA and DPH. So any other updates in the meantime, Catherine or Sean?
On my end, very briefly. We're going to be issuing guidance because we've had a few questions on some of the provisions of the Muni bill from a few weeks ago. So we'll be issuing guidance hopefully within another week on some of the provisions, including the 1/12th budget process, what that would look like, approval for use of free cash post June 30th, if we get to that point, and the amortization of a revenue or expenditure deficit over a 3-year period. So we'll have something out again hopefully within a week or so on that.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We will, obviously you'll send that out to everyone. We'll post it and share that in real time. I do note, it looks as though the Lieutenant Governor may have joined us. Is Lieutenant Governor with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. We've covered a brief presentation regarding the CARES Act by Catherine Hornby and a quick update from DLS. And so your timing is perfect if you want to come and give some general overview comments and then field some questions from our membership.
That would be great. And if Catherine or Sean can stay on, that would be terrific too. And I really appreciate being with all of you. These are really, really hard times, and as we know, and then as you look around other parts of the country and the world, they're in a different maybe place or phase. So it's tricky because you see the national message and then you hear the local message. And we very much have to look at the facts on the ground and the data that we have to determine our next steps. So let me just speak to the announcement today.
I think we may have just lost the Lieutenant Governor's phone connection. So while she comes back on, we'll just wait a second. And see if she can get on. We'll have our team reach out to her Lieutenant Governor's office as well. Did sound as though that phone connection was a little shaky at the beginning. As we wait for that to happen, I do have a couple of questions that have come in. One has to do with finances. And it's a sort of a general discussion. Catherine, maybe you'd be able to answer this, and that is whether or not there will be a consensus revenue forecast, or whether or not the legislature would be going forward with a budget based on its own revenue. In other words, there was a rehearing. Do you envision having a consensus revenue forecast at some point for common budget planning purposes?
So looking to history as a guide, we have in the 2 years during the spring of 15 and the spring of 16 and the spring of 17, when we substantially revised the tax forecast for the coming budgets, we did it cooperatively with the budget, with the legislature, meaning we talked to them, we shared perspectives with them, but the way it actually played out was a little bit different in those 2 years. So I'm not 100% sure how it will play out this year, whether it would be a sort of a formal three-way consensus or whether it would be more of a discussion and then the legislature takes the lead from that discussion. But certainly it's a conversation that we would have with the House and the Senate jointly.
Okay, thank you. And then I believe that Lieutenant Governor did come back on. Is...
Yes.
Hi, Lieutenant Governor.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. So
I've been talking four times. I apologize for that. I just wanted to get to the announcement of today, which is relative to our schools. You may have heard the governor's announcement at noon, and I just wanted to reiterate how we got there and how difficult a decision, obviously, that is, and just thank all of you as municipal leaders, managers, mayors, selectmen, school committee, working with your superintendents, principals, educators, parents, to help us make this decision. There was a struggle, very much a desire on behalf of everyone to try to see kids back into classrooms where they can be with their peers and their teachers and learn in that environment. So it was really, really difficult to be in this place. But if you take what is the primary objective through all of this and think about it from a safety standpoint and whether it is safe to return to classrooms for learning, then the answer that we arrived at is no. Given where we are with the COVID illness spreading across the Commonwealth, what we're looking at in terms of admissions to emergency rooms and the testing data that we have, we are very much in a surge. And will be tracking this data to determine with the health professionals and experts that advise us when there is enough data to demonstrate a downward trend in terms of positive confirmed cases and hospitalizations that will allow us to pivot to a next phase of this response. And we're not there yet. And given all of the information we have, like you, we have to make the best decision with what we have available at the time. We're about 2 weeks out from that May 4th date, and this is the time for us to say that the best way to finish the year is through remote learning. And remote learning looks different in different places of the Commonwealth, depending on what you have access to. So whether it's accessing programs through GBH or it's accessing packages that are shared with students, or it's through online tools, all of that is available. What we announced today is that remote learning will continue through the end of the year. You will also hear from DESE and Commissioner Riley specifically that there will be a set of standards to guide the remote learning through the end of the year and support to educators and superintendents to take advantage of the programming and curriculum that is available, and to make sure that we are preparing our kids for the best we can for the next phase. We did not make any decisions on summer camp, summer programming. We will continue to monitor the data to inform us there. And obviously, we are working with the experts on safety protocols for what a reopening looks like, whether it's in a workplace for business purposes or a workplace for schools. We need to develop the set of criteria. You're seeing this happen in other states to help us put together the best practice, the toolkit, if you will, around safety. And then we want to work with all of you on the local level and the school districts around what implementing that looks like and what are the assets that you need to do that and the resource so that we're as ready as possible for the next school year. So that was announced today. In terms of non-emergency childcare programs, those are closed until June 29th, and emergency childcare programs will continue to operate. So there is childcare available through this period. And then we will be making further decisions regarding May 4th and reopening. I would say this is something also to understand. While we took guidance from the feds on how we got to closure, that involved categorizing activities around essential and non-essential. At this point in the response, it is a conversation around how to return people to places for work and activities in a safe environment. So the goal will be able to establish what safety means in different places and be able to make decisions around what activities can take place in moving away from just essential, non-essential. So that you will hear from us further about. I can go on with my points here or we can take calls. What I would normally do is just run through the things that we have available, obviously nursing homes, testing, the dashboard that was created and released yesterday around data was really important. I want to thank all of you for helping us. Publishing and reporting feature of cases by city and town. That's also directly from the input we received from you. PPE, that also was changed as we were able to gain more equipment with your input. We've now been able to provide respirator masks to all law enforcement officers, including sheriffs and university police. That distribution effort is being coordinated through MEMA, as you may be aware. and we could provide you further information there. And yesterday was a really big day on unemployment because we had to set up a completely new system for self-employed and gig employees who were not part of the traditional UI system. They are now accessing a system to apply and gain unemployment benefits. That went up yesterday after we tested it over the weekend, and it's working. So we're really thrilled about that. And then we continue to work through the remote call center, which went from 50 at the beginning of this to 850, processing these applications in Spanish and other languages, and holding virtual town halls all across the state in multi languages. The contact tracing program also continues, working with your boards of health. And I'm happy at this point just to pivot to further information you'd like to share with our team and try to address any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. And we appreciate the difficult decision regarding schools. There were a number of questions that had come in, but I think that you addressed those regarding the programming for schools, remote learning, and you're working with the Superintendents Association, ESSE, and the Executive Office of Education to provide guidance and resources, but recognizing that the programs may be different in different parts of Massachusetts for the remainder of the year. We do have several questions just asking whether or not you anticipate an extension of the May 4th date for the closure of non-essential businesses as you develop the protocols for a safer reentry into the workplace for others.
Okay, I touched upon that very briefly. You'll hear more from us later in the week around the next phase. So I can't stress enough, though, that we are in this surge. It appears from our numbers that is the case. And just as recent as like Friday, in places in our Commonwealth, in the Worcester area in particular, or in the South Coast area, it seemed relatively even, like the number of admissions and discharges were about even. But now over the weekend, that picture's changed in places like Worcester. So you're seeing a higher volume, more inflow to the homeless shelter, and more inflow for underserved communities to have isolation. So things do change. That's why it's really important that we look at the data, and we can see that there are harder spots around the Commonwealth that we still need to manage through. But as we think about a reopening strategy, and we're assembling experts from public health as well as global CEOs and local government to be involved in this effort to think about what a reopening looks like, it will be triggered. Certain things that can reopen will be triggered by the data. And so relative to May 4th, you may not hear us say continue to a date certain. We're going to say we're going to look at the data to trigger which activities and workplaces and settings can reopen because they are safe to do so. So we will have more to say about that toward the end of the week. But let me emphasize here, we will need your help. Because think about how we started this effort and how important it was for boards of health and local inspectors to be part of it. And we will need you again to think about how to enforce and help employers, public and private, to comply with a new sort of safe standard in the workplace. So your input will be directly valued in this next phase.
We do see some questions and comments on the chat line, just expressing concern about having an early lifting in a way that creates a rebound and a second surge. And so I think that local officials are very interested in working, continuing to work closely with you on the question of making sure that the Commonwealth navigates through this with maximum safety and ensuring that communities have the resources and the ability to enforce whatever the next phase looks like. There's a sort of a reentry into a re-engagement in some of the economic activities.
Right. Let me speak directly to that, because that question and comment is very articulate and very pertinent to this moment. We worked, all of us, so hard, from local government, state government, public health, hospitals, everyone, employers everywhere, to get to this point where we're managing through the health response. Yes, we have a number of people who have died as a result. I think our number is over 1,800 now, which is horrible. At the same time, we are not over compromising our healthcare delivery system because of the capacity, the equipment, and the amazing talent that we have across that front line. We worked so hard to get to this point that certainly we don't want to reopen and then run the risk that we'll have another, like a W, right? Another spike come the fall. That would be devastating to all of us. So really, really important that we use the data and the science to really tell us when certain things can take place. But I do think it's possible for us now to plan for and prepare and listen to all the stakeholders, local government, business leaders, as well as government, state government folks, and the obviously health experts, to put together the plans, the best practices, the standards, the protocols for when that moment may come to trigger some of these openings. So the governor spoke to this at the press avail today, that we have to do the right things at the right time, including not putting ourselves at risk by reopening and rushing to that point. This is an enormous sacrifice. We are all foregoing activities or simple interactions with loved ones that we maybe took for granted a couple of months ago, and we don't now. And it's going to take discipline, precision, focus, and a partnership to make sure we make the right decisions at the right time.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. We also note that several questions have come in just expressing concern about a fast reopening and the limited capacity of cities and towns given all that they're doing. And so just when there is a transition to there's clearly sentiment among the folks who are participating in this meeting to have it be done in a staged and phased way that matches the ability of the cities and towns to be able to apply resources and work to ensure safety and success.
That's correct.
I would just try and see if there are any other questions or comments. Again, several are saying, even though it's painful, just encouraging a longer stay at home advisory and non-essential business closure as that plan is being developed.
Can I ask a question too? Maybe someone can answer, because we definitely are in this surge and there's a lot of need throughout our Commonwealth to meet and to get back to that part of the conversation. So for instance, there are communities that are struggling with
food delivery system. And I'm just curious to know whether this is bubbling up as an issue in areas of our Commonwealth. If anyone has those needs or can articulate an answer for me, please either do so on this call or share with Jeff whether the food insecurity issue is intensifying and whether we need to develop some regional response to help you.
So that, thank you very much. I would encourage everyone to provide information in the chat regarding that. We will save all of those and share those points with the Lieutenant Governor's office. We're now going to set a record for the 5 weeks, I'm sure, of having the longest chat transcript. But it's important if your region is facing issues of food insecurity and delivery and supply chain, please let us know and we'll contact and share that with the Lieutenant Governor's office. I do know that that Director Phillips needs to go in just a moment. We did have a question to come in specifically for MEMA, and hopefully Sam Phillips will be able to stay with us for just a minute longer so I can ask that question. I'll unmute you. The question has to do with the provision of PPE. There is some confusion regarding how private entities access PPE, whether or not to go through municipalities or to go directly to MEMA. And there have been some conflicting signals or information or guidances that appear to have come out. And so it's just a request for clarity regarding how private sector entities access PPE. And then the second part of that is a concern that there are private ambulance companies, emergency medical services companies that are having, that report having some difficulty getting PPE, even though they are the providers of ambulance services for municipalities. So just wondering if there's some information clarity regarding that.
Sure. Good afternoon. This is Sam Phillips. So private emergency medical services do request PPE through the Department of Public Health through their regional HMCC. That has always been the case. Fire-based municipal EMS request their PPE through MEMA, through MEMA's regional offices. We have not been providing PPE to private industry. You know, we can certainly visit kind of criticality of the need. We're not opposed to looking at that, but we still are doing a lot to on our own supply chain and focusing on kind of essential public sector services, such as group homes and public safety and congregate care facilities. You know, I would say my guidance would be to reach out to MEMA's regional office, and then we can look at the request and explore whether we could expand our PPE distribution.
I think part of the concern is that as there's a reemergence of commercial activity, that the marketplace may increase demand and what the for masks, gloves, et cetera, and whether or not there will be a protocol in place to help shape that to ensure that the public sector has what it needs, emergency responders have what they need, but also the industry has what it needs in order to keep their employees safe but re-engage.
I hear you. I think as there start to be conversations about reopening, there will need to be conversations about that piece as well. But right now, as the Lieutenant Governor described, as we're in the surge and still really focusing on the healthcare and public safety response to this, that remains our focus from a PPE distribution perspective.
And then finally, okay. on this point, just if there's a municipality that does have a private ambulance company and is they are being told that that ambulance company is having difficulty securing PPE through the separate access point, who would they talk to? who should they talk to?
So private ambulances should be requesting PPE through HMCC, their regional health and medical coalition. That's under the Department of Public Health. That said, if they're having a hard time, feel free to work through the MEMA regional office and we can triage between the two departments.
Excellent. I think you said that and answered that already. I apologize for re-asking that question. But
that's okay.
Thank you for that answer.
Thank you.
Do you have any updates before you have to go? I'm scrolling right now while I ask to see if there's another MEMA related question.
No, I don't. And I apologize. I do need to run. I have an urgent issue I have to jump off for, but thank you for including me this week.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, Director.
So, thank you.
Lieutenant Governor, we have some other questions for that are coming up for other members of your team. Would it be appropriate for me to run through those questions now?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. One of the questions that came in has to do with city budgets, and this is a Sean Cronin question regarding the administration's support for ensuring that cities have an adequate amount of time, mayors have an adequate amount of time to put together their budgets, since there's not enough information available, and if there's an effective deadline of about May 15th, that could pose a challenge, a real challenge in terms of developing a budget that that is based on accurate information regarding levels of state aid, federal aid, and so on. So just Sean, wondering if you have any updates regarding your thinking on that issue.
Yeah, definitely something we're supportive of. I have a call with MAPC and local finance officials on Thursday, where we're going to be talking about some other thoughts and ideas around municipal finance issues. But this is definitely something we've talked about, worked on language, and I think it's safe to say that there'll be something coming forward to help address that.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Then let's see, there's another question. I will share that there is a lot of sentiment regarding extending the May 4th date as I scroll through. Here's a public health question. With schools closing for the year, is there any update on guidance on summer park programs and recreation programs? Many are held outside. Is there a place where communities can go to find how they should be thinking about shaping those programs?
Thank you for the question. We have given guidance on that yet. We will. We are further examining the summer programming, and we'll have more for you. Today was the announcement around closing classroom learning for the remainder of the school calendar year for 1920. And also the announcement regarding childcare. There will be more guidance coming around summer programming, including parks programs, local programs for youth.
There's a question that's come in regarding the funding of a small cities program that hoping that state regulations would be amended to allow for flexibility to promote small business development projects and so on. But that raises another question regarding the latest thinking on state grants, since there are a lot of deadlines, but it's extremely difficult for communities to be able to submit and for the Commonwealth potentially to be able to disperse, given the fact that many of these are for operational initiatives and programs. So is there, we know that that you've been giving this a great deal of thought about what the mechanisms or the possibilities are for ensuring more time for communities to respond and submit grant applications, and also more time for the state to be able to adapt to what is becoming a more restrictive environment for operations and service delivery.
All right, Sean might have more on that, but I'd like to just ask about the, and Sean, maybe you have more information on the CDBG program for municipalities to participate in. I remember having a conversation with you about those funds being available for communities that are not part of a CDBG program, but that there could be funds that flow through to a municipality to support small business. That's one. And the other is just what the flow of grant money is at the moment, and maybe you can speak to that, Sean.
Sure. So first on CDBG, my understanding is that there's federal money that's going to flow through Executive Office of Housing and Economic Development related to CDBG. So we can certainly push out some information when that gets closer to being launched. The second issue, that's on our list as well. Already exploring options around state grants, and that's something that is on our list of things to address under the finance realm.
And another related question to finance is whether or not there's ways to deal with cash flow. I know that you and I and the MMA staff have talked about this, deal with cash flow relief during what will look like a challenging year. For example, a payment schedule for pensions and so on.
So I think there's a couple of highlights on that. One is the obvious, which is there is a market for short-term notes to carry a community through if you have cash flow issues. Both the State House Notes Program, which we run at DLS, but also in my weekly communications with the financial advisors, the market seems pretty strong right now, at least for short-term notes. So there's that possibility. We're not sure yet what, if anything's going to come of another part of the CARES Act program or law that basically allowed state and locals to borrow for short-term cash flow purposes. The provision called for municipalities or governmental entities with a population of at least 1 million, which obviously doesn't cover anybody in Massachusetts. So it would have to be a state. If anything comes of it, it'd be a state-run program. That's something I know ANF is exploring as well. And then I'll throw this out there somewhat hesitantly, the issue of paying your pension assessment early, which is basically one of the variables that you include when you go through the actuarial process to determine your unfunded liability. That assumes that you might be paying some piece of or all of your assessment in the first month of the fiscal year. We're exploring with PERAC whether or not local retirement boards have the ability to push that back to, say, January, which would give you huge relief in the month of July. There would definitely be some actuarial issues with it. You know, you're not earning the full assumed rate of return that the valuation model thought, but I think that the overall state of the market right now is going to have a much larger impact on your pension system than 6 months of lost investment, or actually look at another way, maybe save money. There's three examples there of things that we're exploring that can definitely provide communities with some sort of cash flow.
Thank you very much on that. And then I'd just like to echo, there's a question came up just with concern about attending to the financial needs of smaller communities and programs to support cities and towns. As you know, the CARES Act had a cutoff of direct aid to cities and towns of 500,000 and more, which included then only 39 communities in all of the nation for direct aid from the federal government. There was money that provided to the Community Development Block Grant Program. There are a lot of communities that don't participate in that, but there is a non-entitlement amount. That's the amount that you mentioned that was provided to Massachusetts. That's a $20 million allocation from once the rules are written, it's estimated to be available for the Executive Office of Housing and Economic Development to be able to disperse for community development and economic activities in Massachusetts. And the MMA certainly joins with all of the small communities in Massachusetts in encouraging getting those funds out as quickly as possible. So we appreciate your mentioning that and talking about that as an item that's already on the radar screen for the administration. That's important. Unfortunately, the way Washington works is they tend to think all communities are large when in fact all communities are medium-sized and small in this country, except for a handful. We support and work for all of them, but we want to make sure that no municipality is left behind. So thank you. I know, Lieutenant Governor, that that's a hallmark of your administration as well.
That's correct. We will work with all of you. We know it's not a one-size-fits-all, and it's not by virtue of the size of a community, but it's also location within our Commonwealth, whether you're coastal or you're in the Berkshires or you're small, rural, or urban, small, or urban, large. You all have unique needs and strategies, concerns, and resource demands. So we will work with all of you. You know that. And this partnership is really, really important as we get through this surge and prepare for the next phase and beyond. I can't thank you enough. And I've said this, and the governor, our state is only so strong as each one of its 351 cities and towns.
Thank you. There are just a couple of questions left, and we have about a minute and a half left, so the timing might work out. This is a question. There's this state forest, state beaches, always a challenge. There's a community that has a state forest in their town. Is the state responsible for enforcing a 10-person rule, even if the park is shuttered? The parking lots just get full, people hike in, and the community knows that the 10-person rule is not being followed. Who does the enforcement in state forests?
That's a good question. We all have just so much resource to enforce these rules. What I would suggest is that particular issue, if you could send that to Jeff and send it to us, we will monitor that with you. We are monitoring our parking lots and our beaches, and we need your help. So if you have a specific issue there, that's something that we'd like to know, and maybe we can send out some resources, especially as the weekend comes, to help you.
Great, thank you. And then there are a couple of other questions. One, we will continue to work with you and your team, Lieutenant Governor, on a variety of issues that come up, including quorums at town meetings and what if elections need to be extended beyond June 30th. There are a lot of questions. We'll continue to work on those, and as the answers come up, we'll provide those to municipalities. There is a question, and I see Elizabeth Denniston's on, hopefully still there, whether or not the new September holiday will be a paid holiday for municipal employees.
Jeff, let me check on that. I believe we've designated it as a state holiday in the general laws, which I believe means it's treated for all purposes as a state holiday, but I will confirm that answer.
Okay, and we'll share that out with our membership. And then finally, this has to do with essential businesses. There's a question about whether or not libraries will be closed along the same timeline as schools. This is the final question, but I think that the decision about whether or not to open a library or not is a municipal decision. Is that correct, Elizabeth?
So I believe the libraries were treated as non-essential per our essential businesses order. So okay. Whether or not they will reopen will be on the same timeline as the essential decision.
I see, following the same guidance and protocols that are established as outlined earlier by the Lieutenant Governor.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Lieutenant Governor, we've come to 2 o'clock. You and your team have answered lots of questions. Do you have any final words before we close this week's briefing?
No, we just stay connected to us, and there's obviously a lot more work to do. No need to wait for the next call to have these matters addressed, and we will continue to provide you with information and feedback so that you can do your jobs the best possible too. So be safe. All the protocols stay in place, social distance, limit activities. If you need help locally to look at things, we will do that. I did want to just put this out there. We did file some legislation on EEE because as we are in this pandemic response mode, we all know that EEE also was a threat in places across our Commonwealth. So we're looking to work with all of you as the, you know, spring season opens up more fully around us. So we will continue to stay in touch and can't thank you all enough, all of you. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. We will share all of the comments regarding the food insecurity question with you so that you get that, the flavor of what's happening and the input across the Commonwealth. And we look forward to continuing to work with you on all of these challenges that communities are facing. Thank you very, very much. So this concludes the fifth weekly briefing on COVID-19 by the administration. Please join us next Tuesday at 1 o'clock for our sixth session. I'm sure there'll be lots of new information to discuss and lots of questions to be answered. Thank you all very much.